to be read? Who wants to read jokes?
Here.
I don't want to read a joke.
Just one joke.
You asked for that.
Who else wants to read a joke? Anyone else? Oh.
Please.
Don't argue.
Right. We're going to fight.
Okay, let's get started. The today's session, of course, is complain, complain, complain. I said earlier it was the heart of comedy. We'll start with a premise. Who remembers what I said yesterday about premise? Who was here yesterday?
Yeah, let's start with that.
Okay. All right. Well, a premise. Go. Who's going to say?
It sets up the punchline.
Yeah, it sets up the punchline, and it's the premise is always the premise is what your joke is about. I'm reading this book, or have read this book called Dramatic Writing, and the first chapter is all about premises, and talks about if you go to a movie or a play that for some reason just didn't jive, it didn't click, it felt like something wasn't right. It was usually because the premise wasn't clear. And the premise is what your play or your movie is about. It's the same way with a joke. You have to know what the joke is about. Not only you, but the audience has to know what the joke is about. And if the audience doesn't know what the joke is about, then you have a bad premise or a faulty premise, and you need to be clear on what the joke was about. Michael, I'm going to put you on the spot. Did you have Dr. Kimmerer?
Yes.
Okay, what did Dr. Kimmerer teach us about preaching?
Goal, malady, means.
Exactly. Goal, malady, means. And what's the goal?
You want me to answer that?
Yes, you.
The goal is to move toward the gospel.
Yes. But specifically, you remember what it is specifically?
What, preaching to faith?
No.
Okay.
Specifically, the goal is what you want your audience to walk away with this out of this sermon. You know, so my premise is what exactly what I want people to leave thinking about that particular sermon that was preached. And the malady is how that goes wrong, and the means is how we get from there to there. But anyway, that's not the point. The point was you got to start with a clear premise, a goal, if you will, for a sermon. So a joke is the same way. You have to start with a premise. And yesterday we picked Holden as our topic. And then out of that, we get premises. And the premise asks the question, what's wrong with this? What are the words I said yesterday? Anyone remember?
Who, when, where, those ones?
No, the other ones. What's weird?
Oh, yeah.
Hard.
Yeah.
Hard.
Hard.
Stupid.
Stupid.
Silly.
Scary.
Scary.
Scary. And what's the other one?
Pissed off.
Pisses me off. About my topic. Okay, so we'll pick a topic. Let's pick golf. Who knows? Who has any feelings about golf? What do you have feelings about? Okay, let's do this again. I'm sorry. We'll do Holden. We'll do the mind map thing, and then we'll come up with A big one yesterday was meat.
No meat.
No. What else?
Showers.
Start early.
Here we go again. Showers. What else?
Flatulence.
Okay.
You were here yesterday.
You know I can't spell that.
But that's the idea.
What else?
Bugs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Flies.
Okay, so that's enough. But usually when you, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, when you mind map something, you put the topic there, and then you just list everything about that topic you can. This is really great for getting material for anything, really. A paper, an article, an essay, a sermon, doesn't matter. You put your topic down there, and then whatever pops up out of this mind map, and then you do exactly what we're going to do now. You ask yourself, what's weird? What's weird about no meat at Holden? And this is not the funny part of the joke. This is, there's two parts of the joke. There's the punchline, which is the funny part, and then there's the setup, which is very serious, which is no playing around, absolutely serious about your topic, because you know, this is where you complain, and you gotta come when you complain, it's, you know, it's about something you're serious about. So what seriously do you find weird, hard, stupid, scary, or pisses you off about no meat at home?
There is meat. it's very different from the past when there was no meat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We pay good money for good food. And
okay, you pay good money. So what pisses you off? That's the word I would use. Now remember, when you're writing these jokes, you're in your own house, and so you don't worry about what other people think. But as a comic, you can't be afraid of your opinion. You know, you can't be afraid of your opinion. You know, you have to get it out there, which is I know it's hard for Lutherans, but I don't know of any famous Lutheran comics.
Harrison's
not Lutheran. He's not Lutheran.
No.
He's Brethren. So
he thinks about it.
Yeah.
It's his subject.
He talks about it a lot.
There's a lot more energy around Lutheran than Brethren. So he switched up. But so how would you put that? If no meat pisses you off about what pisses you off about no meat? At Holden. So you would say, you know what pisses me off about no meat at Holden? That's what you would say in your head, or that's what you write at the top of your page if you were writing jokes. And then you'd write down what pisses you off. And what pisses you off is, say that again.
I paid good money for good food, and where's the meat?
Okay.
Where's the meat? It's cheap, and it fills you up, but it doesn't nourish you. And it makes you fat.
Oh. Spoken like a true pastor.
I mean, I'm talking about carbs. You got lots of carbs, which are cheap and they fill you up, but they don't nourish you and they make you fat.
And they taste good. It's too good.
I don't know what pisses you off.
Okay. Okay. So I wrote hers down. I paid good money for good food. And so one of the ways to get it. And finding that then becomes this, which is it's got to be a fact, an observation, or an insight. It's so this premise has to be one of these things, a fact, an observation, or an insight. And that for you would be what? An observation, an insight, or a fact, or how would you think of that?
Insight, I don't know.
Okay, all right. So, I paid good money for good food. So, you know what's weird about not having any meat at Holden Village is I paid good money for good food. Now, we'd have to figure out how to make that funny.
That was your job.
And one of the ways you make it funny is you ask, why does that piss you off?
I like meat.
Okay. I like meat. We keep going until we get something close to funny.
Well, what if we have a flip side?
What do you mean?
From the cow's perspective.
Doesn't that?
There's so little meat at Holden, even the cows in India are converting to Christianity.
Okay. Well, that would be a good joke. You know, yeah. You put that on the list.
Say the kids are living on peanut butter.
The kids are living
consumption.
The alternative proteins that they come up with.
So you'd exaggerate that how? The kids are living on nothing but peanut butter. How would you exaggerate that? Once you get to the part where you say, why does this piss me off? I like meat. How would you exaggerate that with the peanut butter? It's like what pisses you off about not having meat is at Holden is that the kids are living on peanut butter. How would you exaggerate that? The piss, you know. And why does that piss you off that your kids are only eating peanut butter?
Because I can't find them at dinner time.
Okay, let's they don't show up for dinner time. Yeah. They don't show up. They don't bother to show up for dinner anymore.
Because they're not eating much.
They're not eating much. What does too much peanut butter do to you? Does it do anything to you?
Makes it hard to talk.
Makes it hard to talk.
Doesn't work on holding over a black eye.
Okay.
That's fine.
You could say that. My kid got a black eye. There's no meat at Holden. We just use peanut butter. That's a perfectly good joke. So that's how jokes work. You write the premise. You have to come up with a decent premise, which is basically your opinion, and then you add attitude to it. And these are your attitude words: weird, hard, stupid, scary, pisses me off. Now you could add other things to it to help you get to it, but this is not my idea. I got this out of the books. It's not like I've created this. But there are other words you can use. What's BS about it? What's odd about it? What bugs you about it? What irritates you about it? What's wrong about it? You know, whatever it takes to get at at your premise. You know what's weird about not having meat at Holden. You know what's wrong with not having meat. You know what bugs me about not having meat at Holden. You wanna get to this target. The target is no meat. That's your target, and you wanna get at that. And you know, like I said yesterday, there's a certain amount of hostility that goes into your target, that you're directing at your target. So there's hostility towards Holden because they don't have enough meat, you know, to get at a good joke.
Yeah, could you turn it the other way and say, like, try to be ironic about it, say, there's so little meat here that people might start getting used to it and start eating in ecologically sustainable ways.
Well, that's true, but it's not funny. Well, but if you can make it
could be if you your voice was such that you saw that as a bad thing.
You can make anything funny if you see it. If you have hostility towards
meat eaters,
surely you could turn that around. And you know, like I'm assuming that vegetarians have all kind of jokes about meat eaters. You know, are there any vegetarians in the room? What? And you're all up here. But yeah, that's That's the point. You know, you can make, if you can make it funny, if it irritates you enough, if you find it, you know, like the topic, complain, complain, complain. If that's one of your complaints, you can make it funny. Let's take another one. Let's not do Holden. Let's do something political here. All right.
Oh. What's it say?
Obama. So out of these complain words and these, what comes to people's mind?
Too conservative.
Okay.
Yeah, he compromises too much.
That's not contagious.
Anything else?
A little mole by his nose.
Say that again.
A mole by his nose.
His middle name.
I heard this great
his
joke.
His middle name.
I heard this great joke, and you could see how it worked. You know, like, what did I do? Okay, I keep referring to yesterday, but I don't know how many of you were here. But, you know, to write these gags, you make a list of things about the person, and then you kind of cross them over. But one joke said that this guy said that Obama's hair is getting so white that the Tea Party is thinking of nominating it for president. So I thought that was funny. But you could see how that joke worked. You know, they made a list of things about Obama, and then you know, they just cross-checked it with what was going on in the news. They made that list like we did yesterday.
Tax breaks, I guess, for the rich.
Tax breaks for the rich. And you can pick, you know, you don't have to necessarily limit yourself to political things like the mole guy, and then he still smokes.
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, he still smokes.
He still has that BlackBerry thing.
Oh, he does? Okay. BlackBerry.
BlackBerry.
Is that what he has? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, these things have to really bug you. If they don't bug you, there's no heat. You know, when you go to make a joke, there's nothing there because it really doesn't irritate you enough.
His middle name, then. His middle name.
Okay. So. Hussein. It would be much better if his middle name was something like Joe. Or Frank. Barack Frank Obama.
I think we'd like that.
I don't know if we'd ever elect someone with a name like Barack Frank Obama. But anyway. So can we agree on something, or can somebody come up with a premise on this? What bugs you, pisses you off, you think is stupid, scary?
The tax breaks for the rich, I've never said it before, it pisses me off.
Okay.
Is that Obama, though? I thought that was the other side.
He doesn't do anything.
He agreed to it.
Well, would that go into compromising? Would that be?
Compromised.
He compromises too much. So one of the things that pisses you off about Obama is that, you know what, I'll write the whole thing here. he compromises too much? Is that what I said? Or what?
Sure. Yeah.
How would you make that funny?
Could you contrast it to his opponents who don't compromise enough?
Well, you could. You could make it funny, and if it fits within this, because you know you're talking about Obama compromising. You know what pisses you off about Obama is he compromises too much.
Could you set that up a little bit more by saying Barack extends the Bush tax cuts? Adds a little bit more definition as far as.
If you can make it funny, you can say anything you want. But you, number one, people have to understand it, so you don't want to get too wonky about it. And so if you say he compromises too much, then the next thing you have to do is show how he compromises too much.
He smokes but doesn't inhale.
Well, I don't know. Is that compromising?
Maybe apply it to his parenting skills with his daughters.
Yeah, if you can make
They're
it funny.
They're compromising about the curfew.
Oh,
they come
yeah.
With a,
that's yeah.
They
that would be a good
curfew, and he has to
extend it to his parents. He's got one black and one white parent.
Yeah. You can make it funny.
That you don't recognize. Who he is as president versus candidate.
If you can make it funny.
You can make it funny.
If you can make it funny, if you can say, Obama compromises so much, his daughters don't go to bed till 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know. What's another one? He compromises so much. He let Russia borrow the Constitution. Or I don't know, but I mean, this is not impossible to come up with. This is a good start to a joke. But that's how they start. That's what you would do. You got to say what's weird, what bugs you, and then get at it from that way. And you always have to have a target. You always have to have somebody you're aiming this at, you know. So, I mean, we can think about that, but we can move on. This is TEE, the target, the emotion, and the exaggeration. So we'll do that with him. The target is definitely Obama. The emotion is anger, you know, being pissed off and his compromises. And then the next thing we need is exaggeration. How do we exaggerate that? Take it, you know.
Well, regarding his cigarette smoking, going back to the famous Clinton line, and playing off of that, could you say, I did not have puffs with that cigarette?
Yeah, okay.
Clinton said, I did not have sex with that woman.
Yeah. You can do that, but then you're mixing your metaphors. You're mixing you're mixing the Clinton stuff with the Obama stuff.
Okay,
you know, Obama has his own issues. Clinton has his issues. You know, and we come up with some of Obama's issues. You know, he waits too long to make a move. Sometimes he's way too practical. Sometimes he doesn't seem to get angry enough. You know, he doesn't have he doesn't give anybody red meat, you know. He could be at home. But he may be Lutheran. But you know, that sort of thing. So that's kind of how it is. I'm not sure if there's anything.
Come back to the white hair that he's using Grecian formula on one half of his head.
Ooh.
Okay.
How about Using the middle name or the name and...
Hussein.
What's that?
Hussein, yeah, go ahead.
Right, and the compromising saying, how do we know that Barack Obama got his compromising skills from his mom? Because his name's Barack Hussein Obama.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, okay. That makes sense. I don't know if a crowd could get that. A crowd,
right,
in a,
okay.
You know, when you're in a comedy club, you're in a room about like this. You're up on a platform on stage. It's totally dark and people are drinking. I don't know if they're going to reach that far.
Right, you've got to lead them to the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Obama just made a decision today and the temperature in hell dropped to 31 degrees.
All right. Because I don't know what the temperature in hell is.
31 is freezing.
Okay, so let me prime the pump here. Who's got articles? Read the, okay, there's just one Chris Rock joke that's appropriate for Holden. And read it.
Was it the one with the check mark? Is that
yeah,
the one?
Okay. Yeah.
Krispy Kreme donuts. He is damn right. If he told you that Krispy Kreme donuts got crack in them, you would say, I knew something was up.
That's his take on Krispy Kreme donuts because they're so good and people want them so much. So the target is Krispy Kreme donuts. And so his premise would be Krispy Kreme donuts are so good. Or do you know what's, let's say scary, do you know what's scary about Krispy Kreme donuts?
They're so addictive.
Yeah, they're addicting. And then he exaggerated them. It's like, you know, it's like crack. And if you know Rich, if you know Chris Rock, he's always got jokes about crack. I mean, crack is a great punchline, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
If you can get crack in a joke, it's usually
you're laughing before you say it.
So Obama compromises so much he's on crack.
Yeah, exactly. So.
With Michelle Bachman.
Well, that's
we're
a story.
Starting to wonder where he's getting his crack from.
That's all.
Yeah.
All right. Who else had? How about the Jerry Seinfeld jokes? All right.
You want me to read them all in order?
Just read the ones that are checked.
The ones that I like. Well, the ones that are checked. What's this with cab drivers and BO? Just how long are these shifts? It's like they get in the cab and they drive till they're dead. Then they always have that cherry pop-it thing on the dashboard, like that's supposed to be some kind of an improvement. Now you've got cherry-flavored BO. I can't even imagine fruit going that long without a shower.
So, do you see what I'm saying there? He's got issues with the cab driver, with how smelly the cab driver. So, his premise would be, you know what's hard about cab drivers, or it pisses me off about cab drivers, is that they go so long without taking a shower. And then he gets, you know, to the other stuff, the exaggeration. Continue.
Men want the same thing from their underwear they want from women, a little bit of support and a little bit of freedom.
Automatically, you mention underwear, and there's some humor in there. You don't have to stretch too far to get humor out of underwear. So,
stretch.
Well, there you go. You got your joke there. Obama's so good at compromise, he wears both boxers and briefs.
Hey. See, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Okay. Dogs are the leaders of the planet. If you see two life forms, one of them's making a poop. The other one's carrying it for him. Who would you assume is in charge? What's with the people who put carpeting on the lid of a toilet seat? What are they thinking? Gosh, if we have a party, there may not be enough standing room. I better carpet the toilet
seat. Jerry is always puzzled. He's always, you know, what's up with this? What's up with that? You know, he's always puzzled. That's kind of his shit.
Would somebody please explain to me those signs that say, no animals allowed except for seeing eye dogs? Who is that sign for? Is it for the dog or the blind person?
His thing is often what's weird. His thing is often what's weird about that. What's weird about carpeting on toilet seats?
Yeah. So,
is that it?
Oh no, there's a lot more.
I mean, no, that I marked.
That you marked, yeah.
Yeah. I'll read some.
If airline seat cushions are such great flotation devices, why don't you ever see anyone take one of them to the beach? Bozo the Clown. Do we really need the clown? Are we supposed to confuse him with Bozo the Tax Attorney? Bozo the Soul?
And see, his jokes are all based in reality. He's not going anywhere out of the way to find these jokes. This is like, you know, you could be, you know, in an airplane. You could, you know, they talk about your seats as a flotation device. That makes perfect sense. He didn't make that up. He didn't go out of the way for that. He's stuck right with that. And then the joke part was unreality. So it's reality, unreality, sane, insane. You know, that's how you do it. Nice, mean, you know, that kind of thing.
Why is it illegal to park in a handicapped parking space, but it's okay to go to the bathroom in a handicapped stall? one more. Now they show you how detergents take out bloodstains. Pretty violent image there. I think if you've got a t-shirt with a bloodstain all over it, maybe laundry is not your biggest problem. Maybe we should get rid of the body before you do the wash.
All right, you see how that works. George Burns, who's got that?
Sincerity is everything. If you can fake that, you've got it made. I love to sing, and I love to drink scotch. Most people would rather hear me drink scotch. I smoke 10 to 15 cigars a day. At my age, I have to hold on to something. Smartness runs in my family. When I went to school, I was so smart, my teacher was in my class for 5 years. A good sermon should have a good beginning and a good ending, and they should be as close together as possible. Happiness, a good cigar, a good meal, a good cigar and a good woman, or a bad woman, it depends on how much happiness you can handle. Don't stay in bed unless you can make money in bed. When I was young, I was called a rugged individualist. When I was in my 50s, I was considered eccentric. When I'm doing and saying the same things I did then, now I'm labeled senile. There are two kinds of cruises: pleasure and with children.
And a lot of George Burns' jokes, although he was one of these two-dimensional, you know, comics I talked about yesterday. Who remembers what I said about two-dimensional comics?
A radio personality?
Yeah.
They don't have anything about them or anything personal? Or?
Yeah, sort of, yeah. You're right, they don't have anything personal about, you don't see what's going on in their head, as opposed to Jerry Seinfeld. You know, you could see what was in Jerry's head, you know, but you don't really see what's in Bob Hope's head or Jack Benny's head or George Burns' head for that matter. But another thing about a two-dimensional comic as opposed to a three-dimensional comic, two-dimensional comics, there's no act out. They just tell the joke. They don't do anything. Today's comics pretty much all do something. they make a noise, they make a sound, they push the joke a little further out there by an action. They give you a visual, you know. So that takes comedy to a different level. And one, the people they give credit for that to is they give an awful lot of credit to Richard Pryor for that. But Richard Pryor says that he was influenced by Bill Cosby. So the younger comics, well, they're not young anymore. They're the baby boomer comics. But many of them give a lot of props to Richard Pryor. But I think they just like Richard Pryor because he was just so edgy. But Pryor said that he was influenced by Cosby. And if you've ever seen Cosby, you know Cosby does not, he sits in a chair, but he's moving all the time. He's making faces, he's making noises, he's making sounds. He's making his comedy really come alive. It's hard to just read a Cosby joke and think it's funny. You have to see Cosby. And we'll talk about that later on. The comics you really have to see as opposed to just hear. You can't really just read their stuff. But Burns was still dealing with reality in the sense that he was dealing with his age. You know, he was an old comic. When he walked on stage, that's what you saw, was an old man, and he had to address that. And he did with the humor. And that's another reality for us, is that if you're gonna be a comic, you have to address what you look like. You know, you can't just get up there and tell jokes and think people are saying, Jesus, he's fat. You know, oh my God, look at her hair. You know, you don't, people do that. That's what people do. Crowds are really pretty, what's the word? Well, critical, mean, they just, perceptive. They just don't take any prisoners. You know, if a lot of comedians say, if you get on stage timid, the crowd will eat you alive. So you have to know who you are, what you're about, what your humor is about, have your premises down, know what this joke is about before you get on stage, because if you don't, the crowd will eat you up. And if you go to open mics and comedy clubs stuff, you know, some people come there specifically to heckle. A guy will come with his girlfriend and try to impress her and sit there and just heckle people. Or someone will get drunk. The worst people to deal with if they're drunk is a drunk woman. Because, you know, they're so verbal. And men just don't know how to handle that. And you have to kind of watch what you say on stage. You can't be too mean back because you got the mic. So it looks like you're being overly mean. But, you know, you kind of have to be aware of, you know, who you have and what you say and what you're going to say when you get on stage. I remember being on stage early on doing my little thing, and someone from the back of the room yelled, "You suck!" And that never happened to me in church. I did not have a comeback. I just powered through and ignored them, because sometimes if you ignore them, the crowd will get on your side because they know these people are being obnoxious. But anyway. Target, you got to have a certain amount of hostility towards your target. That's all it is. You got to have some hostility. That's what makes the jokes work and make it funny. Now, you don't have to be mean on stage. I mean, you don't have to be mean to the people necessarily, but writing the joke, you just got to have some, I say heat, but you just got to have, you know, some anger and some hostility. Or just really afraid, or it's got to really disgust you, or you got to really think it's wrong to create jokes out of your topic. And we all have topics, things that really piss us off. Everybody has a thing that really pisses them off, or that they think is really scary. give me some, who has things, what are some things that really piss you off?
So, for a moment, I have a question. I don't want to say what really pisses me off, but you're talking about a lot of hostility. You're talking about, you know, there's an edge to this. You know, how do you characterize something like Josh's West Preeb? I mean, there's virtually zero hostility. He didn't attack anybody. I mean, what he did was just plain funny. So how do you characterize that in this formula that you're...
Well, some of Wes's stuff is hostility towards himself. You know, the self-deprecating kind of humor. I mean, you can have the hostility towards yourself, too. And, you know, people find that. That character, that Wes Preeb character, was kind of dumb. You know, some of the stuff he says about the two tents, that's my favorite Wes Preeb joke. You know, it's just kind of dumb. You know, so he's the butt of the jokes. So the hostility is directed towards him. But I'm not saying you have to come off as mean. I'm just saying to find the humor. When you're sitting at home writing stuff, to find the humor, you have to be, you know, there's got to be anger.
Well, does it have to be anger, or is it just passion?
Passion, yeah, passion, that's what I mean.
About, you're passion. About,
yeah. But passion, that's, these are the passion words. What's weird, what's hard for us, what's scary for us. Okay, you didn't want to come up with what pisses you off. In society,
I would say, cell phones. I mean,
exactly. Cell phone pisses
driving,
everybody off.
Especially driving.
Yeah, yeah. But what about an airplane? Airplanes, you know, now they're charging for window seats and aisle seats. Doesn't that piss you off?
Yes.
You know, so we all got those little things that just really get our goat, you know, or things that we find really, really hard, you know. One of the things that I find hard is walking up to my chalet. It's just really hard, you know. So there's some humor in there for me. We're joking about it all the time with those of us who live in chalet 11 or 12 and all the walking we have to do and the huffing and the puffing, you know. That, you know, that's hard stuff and you know, we scary stuff, you know. Little things that scare us, not necessarily big things, but there could be little things that scare us.
How about never getting customer service and you push this button and push that button?
Exactly.
You sit there for hours.
Yeah. Scared to get on a phone because you might get stuck in a phone tree that you don't know how to get out of, or, you know. So that's what humor comes from. All of those little things that build up that, you know, scare us and annoy us.
People that throw cigarettes out of cars.
Exactly. People that throw cigarettes out of cars. Or this really bugs me. People who are standing outside smoking when the bus comes. They put their cigarette down, get on the bus, and blow the smoke into the bus. Oh, it just annoys me. You know. So we all have these little things that bug us throughout the day. And that's what comedy is made of, these little snippets of things that add up to big things that bug us, and that's what we're getting at. This is, if you wanted to be a comic, and nobody has told me that they're interested in doing comedy and working out a routine to do in front of you, but anyway, that option's open. But if you write 5 jokes a day, by the end of the year, you'd have 1,820 jokes. If you just did 2 jokes, you'd have 728 jokes. And let's say 90% of those jokes sucked. But you still have about 70 jokes here and about 180 jokes there that by the end of the year that, you know, that you could use. That would be decent material that wasn't a derivative of something else you heard or that sounded good, held up, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's how you have to think, and that's how you get material. The big thing...
About how many jokes does a comedian normally have for their typical stand-up routine?
I don't know if you go by jokes, you go by minutes. how many minutes you have. Okay. So like if you wanted to do, I know at one point I was looking into doing cruise ships because, you know, you can make money on cruise ships. And but you had to have three different 20-minute sets of clean material. So nobody people will say, huh?
Nobody can do that.
Well, people will say stuff like that. I want 20 minutes of clean material. I want two 20-minute sets of clean material. I want 10-minute set, you know, that kind of thing. And clean just gets you more gigs, really. I mean, when you're doing the comedy clubs at night, you can be raunchy, because that's what, like I said, they're sitting in the dark drinking. They're mostly people in their 30s to 20s, and they like raunch. And you can get those people revved up talking dirty and making dirty comments about this, that, and the other. But if you want to do any TV, if you want to do anything that pays, it has to be clean. I was watching Chris Rock, they were interviewing Chris Rock once, and he was saying, whatever you do, work clean. He says, and people will say, well, what about you? You don't work clean. And he'd say, yeah, but I'm lucky. And he says, look at my house and then go over and look at Ray Romano's house. He says, Ray Romano laughs at my house. Because Ray Romano has made so much money working clean, you know. And you can get a TV show if you're clean. You know, Chris Rock can't get a TV show. You know, you're not going to put Chris Rock in prime time, you know. So.
His is a little later than prime time.
Huh?
His show is a little later than prime time.
Yeah, I mean, she did have a show. It had to be on HBO, and it was, you know, but... And you can do what you want. You can say almost anything you want on HBO. But not Comedy Central. Comedy Central bleeps stuff out. So
I think they bleep it a little bit, but he's got a show that runs in reruns on a couple of channels.
Who?
Chris Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody hates Chris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they bleep. They bleep, you know, they bleep them, so. LPMs, last per minute. You want to, as a comic, you want to get as many laughs per minute as you can get. Your setup should be no more than three sentences. You don't want a long setup before you get to the punchline. Because like I said, people are drinking, their minds are wandering. You know, you got to get to the punchline quick. And so LPMs is last per minute is like what they're looking for. And stand up. How many laughs per minute can you get? How many jokes can you get out? How many laughs you can get per minute? And you know, and so with comedy, you tell the joke and you wait for the laugh. And you don't want to step on your laugh. When they talk about timing, they talk about stepping on the laugh. You want to wait there till they're through laughing, and then you throw in the other part of your joke or you move on to the next joke. You don't want to step on that laugh, because that's what you're there for, is the laugh. So you want to get as many laughs per minute as you can possibly get. That determines, you know, what kind of a comic you are. So stories don't usually work with stand-up, and everyone says, well, what about Costly? He tells stories. He does tell stories, but they're set up and punch. He's still telling us, he's still getting his set up and punches in, and he's still telling his story. It's not a story that goes on and on and on and you gotta wait, you know, for the punchline. His stories are set up and punch. So he's getting his LPMs in also. Where else are we? And you get your comedy from newspaper stands, you know, you can get them off the internet now. People don't go to newspaper stands. Because you see something all the time in the news that triggers you, you know. Blagojevich, you know, it goes on and on. Who knows who Larry the Cable Guy is?
Oh, yeah.
He said, that he gets most of his material, he gets a lot of his material, he says, from C-SPAN. And you're like, really, Larry? C-SPAN? But he says, you know, he watches C-SPAN and he sees stuff that, you know, makes him want to write jokes.
Who's that guy on the public television? Dorky one that we
watch. Oh, Red Green.
Red Green.
Oh, oh yeah.
Red Green.
Yeah. I don't know much about Red Green. I don't even know if that's what kind of comedy that is. Is that is he Canadian?
He's Canadian.
Oh, that's why I don't know what kind of comedy that is. Yeah. But it doesn't matter what I think. If people find Red Green funny, then he's funny. There's a lot of comics who most people think are funny that sort of leave me cold. And vice versa. You know, it depends on what makes you laugh. A kid came up to me, which shocked me, and said he loves, is it Rick Dunham?
Jeff Dunham.
The guy with the puppets?
Yeah. Yes.
And I get nothing from Jeff Dunham. He doesn't do anything for me. Yet he's one of the top 10 highest paid comics, you know. So there's no accounting for taste, you know. Carrot Top, who can explain Carrot Top? And, you know, he's made a good living. So it's up to you. It's what you think is funny. And if you think it's funny and you take it on stage, there will be other people there who think it's funny as well. And there are other elements to go into humor, too. Another thing also is to keep a notebook or something. And, you know, everybody says this, but it's the same for writers or any kind of creative thing that you do. It's always good to keep a notebook and just write stuff down. You know, you can write down a setup in no time. You know, this morning I got up and I ran for the bus. There you go, that's a setup. You know, and then you got to find the humor in that. You know, what's weird about running for the bus? And, you know, there you go. You create a joke from there. So.
What about people that are naturally funny? Like, my middle son has just always been so funny. And he's never put any of this together. Like, he's never used any rules, or it just kind of comes out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's tons of people who are naturally funny. You know, I'm naturally funny. My whole family's naturally funny. But I can't get on stage just being naturally funny and get laughs. Because the people I'm being naturally funny with, they know me. And they know my setups. They know my references. They know all of that stuff. And so it's hard to get on. When you get on stage, you have to make it so strangers can understand where you're coming from. So strangers can understand what your premise is. This, you know, because if you don't, and I've seen it happen 100 times, if you don't, you end every joke with, well, you had to be there, you know.
Yeah, I can make, you know, roomfuls of people laugh, you know, sort of spontaneously, but it's something that comes to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Seinfeld, I remember an interview with him, he said something like, you know, there's a difference between anybody can be funny occasionally, but it's having good material that you can use again and again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have it work every time.
And no matter where you go, you know. So you got 100 good jokes, and they got to play in Vegas. They got to play in a little club in Detroit. You know, they got to play during the daytime during the daytime at some fair. You know, they got to play wherever you go. And so just being naturally funny isn't enough. I hear these comics say, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do tonight. I'm just going to go up and, that's not going to work. And if you're probably not telling the truth if you think that's how you're going to do comedy. You know, it's nothing. there's very little in comedy that's spontaneous. Sometimes spontaneous things happen, and if it happens and it works, it's going to be in the guy's act tomorrow, yeah, the next day, right. The next day, and the next day. You know, that's how it works. Larry the Cable Guy was just another comedy schmuck, you know, doing his thing, and it was okay. And he said one night he was bombing, and it just wasn't work. So he went into this character. He just ad-libbed this cable guy character, and people went crazy. And he said it took him a week or so before he understood that that's a character that people liked. So he became Larry the Cable Guy, you know. So that's how all of that works.
Even improv is rehearsed over and over.
Yeah, there's a tension between stand-up and improv, because improv say stand-ups do the same thing over and over and over again for years, but improvs, they don't admit that they use some of the same stuff over and over and over again. It's just they don't know when they're going to use it, but if the opportunity presents itself, they use it. Whereas in stand-up, you know when you're going to use it. You're going to use it this night. You pick out these jokes, you're going to tell these jokes.
So what kind of comic are you? Do you do Jordan Burns type jokes, or do you lean towards Seinfeld, where you're more observational, or what kind do you do?
Well, that's probably why I'm teaching comedy and not doing comedy. It's because I was never really clear. I never knew what my stage persona was. And, I wasn't wedded to a stage persona that was working, so.
You think that's important that you?
Oh yeah, oh that's very important. Who's got the Joan Rivers jokes? Why don't you read those and we'll see what we mean.
A man can sleep around, no questions asked, but if a woman makes 19 or 20 mistakes, she's a tramp. I don't exercise. If God had wanted me to bend over, he would have put diamonds on the floor. You make the beds, you wash the dishes, and 6 months later you have to start all over again. There's a lot of these about sex. I don't know if you're catching
it. Well, just do the ones that I mark.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've had sex. I've forgotten who ties whom up. I told my mother-in-law that my house was her house, and she said, "Get the hell off my property." I knew I was an unwanted baby when I saw that my bath toys were a toaster and a radio. I wish I had a twin so I could know what I'd look like without plastic surgery.
So Joan Rivers has a very defined character.
Very self-deprecating.
Yeah, people know what they're going to get when Joan Rivers shows up on stage. And that's very important for a stand-up, is that people know, oh, that's the cable guy, you know, that sort of thing's. Comics work for years to get that, and that's what they live for, is to get that. So,
are these personalities they create ever remotely related to their actual personality?
Yeah, it's been described as like a pie, and like if you have 8 pieces of pie, your personality consisted of 8 pieces of pie. What you do is take 2 pieces of that pie and exaggerate it, and you know. That's kind of your character, like Woody Allen, intellectual. Well, yeah, he's a very smart man. He likes books. He likes, so there is a certain part of him that's intellectual.
So Rodney Dangerfield doesn't get any respect?
So say that again?
Does Rodney Dangerfield actually get any respect?
He didn't, because he started off as a comic and he just failed at it. So he went back to selling house paint, I think, is what he was doing. And he would tell people, I didn't get any respect as a comic. Nobody cared. And then one day it clicked. I didn't get no respect. And then once he got that going, boom, he went back into comedy. At a older age. I mean, he started when he was 20-something, and it didn't work, and he went. He stopped and sold house paint and started a family, and then at about 35 or 40, he got that no respect thing and got into it. So, all right, thanks for coming.